So welcome back. I hope, however, that time was spent, there was a sense of being nurtured and arriving, yeah, in this journey of ours. So as I said, we'll just move right into the sitting meditation. So I want to invite each of us to allow our bodies to come into a posture that allows us to feel upright and alert. And this may look like the body in a sitting form, but it may also look like the body lying down. It's not so much the posture, but the energetics of bringing in the energy or acknowledging the energy of these ennobling practices. Yeah, as we take our seats as daughters of the Buddha, sitting together in our various locations. If it's helpful, and as you're closing your eyes in this initial few moments, to think of our thinking of yourself taking your place in the circle of this beautiful Sangha, again, stretching from Pacific Northwest down through California, across the US, and the East Coast, Eastern Canada. Again, allowing yourself to arrive, to take your place in the circle of Dharma sisters. Allowing the body to be as the body is without the need to make it otherwise. Okay. There may be a sense of comfort, there may be a sense of discomfort. Yeah. Okay. Can we be okay with that? Again, just extending this gentle curiosity. How is it to be here in this body? Again, as we are taking our seats. And committing to this inquiry of insight, yeah, this practice of ours in this particular lineage is that of insight, to turn towards ourselves. How is it to be in this form, in this body, in this mind, this heart and spirit? So for the anchor today, I'd like to continue what we were playing with last week of just first allowing ourselves to anchor ourselves in the body, to feel what the sit bones are resting upon, where the feet are. Much as we did in the arriving sit, that sense of, oh yeah, this body resting here. Allowing the energies of the mind that can really swirl and pull us up and out, just to drop down through the core of the body, the pelvic bowl, the legs, resting the attention, if it's helpful, in the lower half of the body. Again, feet on the floor. Feet on the earth, right? Taking our place, connecting into the earth's energies. And then from this place, just watching, how is the mind? And as I mentioned in the arriving set, some of us are sitting with a very quiet mind and others of us are not. And the invitation here is just to notice, can we, as casual and dear observers, just notice the patterns of the mind, the habits of the mind, if there's a tendency to go into a comparing or a judging, there's a tendency of the mind to go into a list making or into an eddy of worry. Or doubt. Or perseveration. So we can embrace the notion of, again, this gentle curiosity. How is it if I really can relax into this physical form in this body, perhaps leaning back into the back body, occupying our full space that's around us. And one of the components of our aliveness is this thinking mind of ours. And sometimes we can feel like that's all there is. And this practice first of anchoring in the body And then just noticing, oh, here's what the mind does. And we're just watching it, like gathering information. It goes here, it goes there, it does this. We can anchor, sort of invite the attention. No, we're going to stay in the body. Resting the attention again on those points of contact, what the body's sitting upon, where the feet are. If the hands are holding each other, that place of contact. If the hands are resting on the legs, that point of contact. And all the sensations that come, if hands are holding each other, the weight of the hands on the legs, the weight of the body on the cushion, the chair, the seat, the weight of the body on the earth. This is where we can point or direct the attention to these places of contact. And we know at some point the mind will have other ideas and spin off into something else. And we're just curious, where does it go? What's it do? Allow the curiosity to become nuanced. What's the tone of the thinking mind? Is it critical? Is it spacey? Is it encouraging? Is it quick? The pace of the think thoughts quick? Is it slow? Again, just curious. Staying anchored in the body. Staying close to the physical experience, and then we're just watching. Oh, this is what the mind does. Without judgment, without needing it to be otherwise. And it's like the camera lens of our attention is wide as we watch the unfolding of where the thinking mind goes. And I am suggesting this sort of almost of a split of attention, of keeping some attention in the body. So we can stay anchored. We have the sit bones, the feet, the hands on the hands, hands on the legs, as a way of touchstone, stay in the body. And we can watch the movements, the weather patterns, the cloud patterns of these thoughts of ours. Yeah. So please remember, there's no such thing as a bad sit. We come, we take our seats, and we see how it is. And on this day, we're allowing ourselves to stay in the body and then just watching without needing to control, without needing it to be otherwise. The mind. Notice when we get along on that thought train, so to speak, and when we remember, oh wait, can I come back just to observing, just watching. So thank you, and being also able to, if possible, also appreciating however the sit goes, just appreciating that we get to be together and practice together. All right, my dears. I hope, however that sit went, however the sit went, that there's a this is a sense of perhaps greater ease. And again, so lovely to sit with everybody. And today, I want to play around in the arena of closeness and allowing ourselves to be close to ourselves, be close to what's true. And in part inspired from reading David Wyatt's Essentials, this little pithy book. And in it, he writes about, I'm going to share a little bit of close. Close is what we almost always are. Close to happiness, close to one another, close to leaving, close to tears, close to God, close to losing faith, close to being alone, close to saying something, something tantalizing, close to something, sometimes tantalizingly close to success, and even with the greatest sense of satisfaction, close to giving the whole thing up. Our human essence lies not in arrival, but in being almost there. We are creatures who are on our way, our journey a series of impending anticipated arrivals. We live by unconsciously measuring the inverse distance of our proximity, an intimacy calibrated by the vulnerability we feel in giving up our sense of separation. To consciously become close is a courageous form of unilateral disarmament, a chancing of our arm and our love, a willingness to hazard our affection, and an unconscious declaration that we may be equal to the inevitable loss that the vulnerable of being close will bring. Human beings do not find their essence through fulfillment or eventual arrival, but by staying close to the way they like to travel, to the way they hold the conversation between the ground on which they stand and the horizon to which they go. We are, in effect, always close. Close to the ultimate secret that we are more real in our simple wish to find a way than any destination we could reach. The step between not understanding that and understanding that is as close as we get to happiness. I read that a number of times to really try to, what is he saying? But this notion of like, we are so, you know, this edge of being close, we're close to getting it. We're close to figuring it out. We're close to this, we're close to that. And this notion of, that's it. We're always almost close. It makes me think of the line from Alison Luderman's poem called, I think, The Obstacle. I think it's called Obstacle, but the notion that if there is an obstacle in your way, it is the way, and that we are in motion. Yeah, we are moving, we are growing. There are things happening that the impermanence, right? A fundamental law, all things change, all that arises will pass away. All those we love, we will lose. You know, we have health, we will lose our health. And being able to really locate ourselves in this transitoriness of our life, of being on the journey, of getting close, and what keeps us separate, where there's sort of the falsehoods, or in, from the Buddhist psychology viewpoint, sort of the delusions of what we allow ourselves to believe as to why we are not close, close to those we love, close to the earth, close to our own internal experience, whether it's trauma, someone when we were young, I was like, I can't go near there. Or stories we tell ourselves about ourselves, stories we tell ourselves about others. In my marriage, there was a time where I was very convinced that I was right about certain things that would happen. Like, how can he not see that I'm right? And I tell my friends, don't you think I'm right? And they're like, oh, yeah, of course, you're totally right. Because it was all my point of view. And it took a while to understand, oh, he's a whole different entity with a different set of expectations and a different set of assumptions and a whole different viewpoint. And it seems so absurd right now to believe that's actually what I thought, but that was actually what I thought. Like, it's so obvious it's happening this way because that was my perspective, in the sense that my view was the right way. And how could anybody else not see it? But this opening, right? And so in being so rigidly set about this is what I believe to be true, it allowed me not to be close because I couldn't understand. I couldn't sort of put down that sense that I was right, or put down the sense of, oh, you're going to have a different take, as each of us would have different takes, right? So in being able to step into that vulnerability, to step into a true connection, what do we need to put down? Stories about ourselves, stories about others, but this sense also about that there's somewhere to get to that will be fixed. If such and such come together, then, in the sense of like, why don't things really ever seem like they're working out? As if there is a concrete destination. Sometimes even the sort of the enlightenment practice, talking with Sylvia Borstein a number of years ago, and she's like, back in the day, there was this belief that we're moving towards enlightenment. That was the goal. We'll get there. And she was reflecting like, not so much. You know, that's not where we're going. Where we're going is really paying attention to how are we going. That's the David Weitzman. It's the way the simple wish to find a way to be in this world that is as close to our own integrity as possible, that is as close to our own Buddha nature as possible. That is the way we move in this world. That is sometimes really hard. But the more we can turn towards ourselves to understand this in the guided meditation of working with the mind, like what is going on? If kind of let unbidden, where does the mind go? What are the habits, the particular eddies it gets caught in? You know, these patternings that it might be decades old that don't serve us at all. But unless we really stop to look at, well, where does the mind go? What are the repetitive thoughts, the repetitive patterns, the conditioning born out of the family that we are raised in, the schools, the environment, all the people that influence us? None of it is necessarily, but it's even pulling aside a judgment if it's good or bad. Is what's running now, the way the habits of the mind, is that serving us in terms of living the way that we want to live? Is it serving us and showing up how we want to show up? In accordance to that which we hold most dear, that which we truly believe, that which is congruent with our authentic way of being, if our heart is open and the mind is steady and still. Sometimes those are rare moments. However, as we endeavor week after week, day after day, for those of us with a daily practice, what's really what we're doing with this insight practice of what's going on, what's actually true. And the way that it's often really hard to understand what's clear, like that example when I was married, talking to my friends, I'm like, oh yeah, you're totally right. And which is lovely that they were supportive, but it's also, where do we get, in what circumstances allow us to have truth reflected and be like, no, actually you're totally off base. And some of us have friends like that, or whoever the wise people in our lives that can kind of call us out to be like, no, what you're saying, you're not in alignment. I think with our practice that, and I talk about this all the time, but when we can really pay attention to the thoughts and then run it through the body to check, like, is this true? Can be a really helpful guide of kind of weeding out, oh, this particular way of thinking is more rooted in fear, or it's rooted in anger, that it's not necessarily rooted in wisdom. Because I think when thoughts and viewpoints are really rooted in wisdom, the body is like, oh yeah, that feels true. There's a congruence. And we can clear the way of what gets in the way first by understanding, what is this? How is the mind working in ways that don't serve, or that lead me astray, or lead me into stress, or lead me into picking fights, or whatever the pattern can be as it shows up? But being really willing to look with courage and honesty of what's actually happening here, what's serving me. There is a quote from a book called Mount Analog. Joseph Goldstein used to quote from it quite a bit, by Rene Dumas. Keep your eye fixed on the way to the. Rene Dumas was a mountain climber, and this book is sort of both metaphoric and literal about mountain climbing. Keep your eye fixed on the way to the top, but don't forget to look right in front of you. The last step depends upon the first. Don't think you're there just because you see the summit. Watch your footing. Be sure of the next step, but don't let that distract you from the highest goal. The first step depends upon the last. And I love this in this, the last step depends upon the first step depends upon the last, that there is a circularity, that if we get too fixated on the goal, we kind of miss the point, because the goal is always going to be changing. You get to the top, well, you can turn around and come back down. So how can we accompany ourselves on this journey, on this way through our life? And again, from the Steinstein Day of Lights, we are creatures who are on our way. Our journey is a series of impending anticipated arrivals, which also necessitates there are intended anticipated departures, right? All that arises passes away. Marriages, we come together, sometimes they separate, or they will separate eventually, whether it's for whatever reason. So being able to kind of anchor ourselves in this known and true ground of impermanence, all that comes will go. We are always moving. There's always a sense of transition, sometimes small, sometimes big. The first step depends the last, depends upon the last. The last depends upon the first. What we bring to each step, our intentionality, our lack of intentionality, our commitment, our aspirations, our ability to pay attention, our ability to stay close to what's true for us, is key and not always easy, right? I think particularly as women, there can be a lot of conditioning to tend to others, to put others first, to take care of others, which is beautiful, and also can be challenging when we're so focused outward. Wait, what's true for me? And again, this isn't being selfish or generous. It's being wise. It's really allowing ourselves to align with a sense of truth. What's true for me? What matters? How do I want to show up in my life? And we've done this exercise a bunch about being able to kind of key in on some certain qualities of the heart that matter the most, that constellation. Again, we've done the exercise a number of times. So what's the constellation that guides us of different heart qualities, if it's integrity or generosity, kindness, whatever it might be, an inquiry that's worthy to investigate with time and again. So we have these anchor points so that we know when we are not close to ourselves, when we are outside our sense of integrity, outside our sense of what's important to us, and being able to come back home, to come back close in to what's true for us. From Wendell Berry, what you need is here. Geese appear high over us, pass and the sky closes, abandon as in love or sleep, holds them to their way, clear in the ancient faith. What we need is here. And we pray not for the new earth or heaven, but to be quiet in heart and in eye clear. What we need is here. What we need to know ourselves, what we need in terms of being able to be congruent, is here. It's knowable, not easy. And why this being able to turn inward to watch the patterning of the mind, to be able to see, is this wise, the way this habit pattern goes? And if not, okay, can we come back into the body to feel our sense of connection to ourselves, to the earth, a sense of what we need is already here. The flip of that also is not to suggest we're not reliant or interconnected with others, right? Because of course we are. And it's pulled from this last week, Gabor Mate's The Myth of Normal. He quotes this book. Jean Leadoff proposes, I'll read from this book, that life develops as an expectation for its environment. I'll read that again. Life develops as an expectation for its environment. The example is the lung. It can be seen as an expectation for oxygen. Our cells as an expectation for water. The ears, an expectation for the vibration of sound. There's an inherent expectation of wired in need, something that if denied, interferes with our physical and psychological equilibrium, leading to poorer health outcomes. The example that I really appreciate here is, so you walk into a corner store and you select something. You smile as you give the person behind the counter the item and the money to pay for it. But the person looks back at you from across the counter and is really grouchy and isn't very nice, takes your money with a monosyllabic grunt and brusquely hands you the change. Your physiology alters. You feel tension in your body. Your heart rate goes up. Your breathing becomes shallower. You are irritated. Depending on your own state of mind, you might feel angry, perhaps even imagining bad things happening to the person. Why is that? According to neuroscience, one of our inherent need is reciprocity. You know, like the lung needs oxygen, the cells need water. We need reciprocity. We are meant to be interrelated. We are interbeing, as Thich Nhat Hanh talks about. So this notion I was speaking of before, of the sort of the congruence that we can come into individually, it's a way of moving with clarity, understanding what our hindrances are and working with them, a lifelong path. And so that's our work, you know, in the recovery language, that would be our side of the street, and also knowing we are so intertwined with others. This organism is organized around reciprocity. Winnicott, child psychologist, British psychologist, speaks about this notion that there's really no such thing as an infant in and of itself. It's always connected to the mother. That there is such a need for us to be in reciprocity with each other. We are wired that way. And it's so much easier, in a way, to have those connections feel true and congruent, authentic, and clear when we are not so hindered and blocked, when we are close into what's true to ourselves. I want to pull in this Thich Nhat Hanh's, please call me by my true names. Don't say that I will depart tomorrow. Even today, I'm still arriving. Look deeply. Every second I am arriving to be a bud on a spring branch, to be a tiny bird with still fragile wings, learning to sing in my new nest, to be a caterpillar in the heart of a flower, to be a jewel hiding itself in a stone. I still arrive in order to laugh and to cry, to fear and to hope. The rhythm of my heart is the birth and death of all that is alive. I am a mayfly metamorphosizing on the surface of the river, and I am the bird that swoops down to swallow the mayfly. I am a frog swimming happily in the clear water of a pond, and I am the grass snake that silently feeds itself on the frog. I am the child in Uganda with skin and bones, my legs as thin as bamboo sticks, and I am the arms merchant selling the deadly weapons to Uganda. I am the 12-year-old girl refugee on a small boat who throws herself into the ocean after being raped by the sea pirate. I am also the sea pirate, my heart not yet capable of seeing and loving. I am a member of the Politburo with plenty of power in my hands, and I am the man who has to pay his debt of blood to my people, dying slowly in a forced labor camp. My joy is like spring, so warm it makes flowers bloom all over the earth. My pain is like a river of tears, so vast it fills the four oceans. Please call me by my true names so I can hear all my cries and laughter at once, so I can see that my joy and pain are one. Please call me by my true name so I can wake up and the door of my heart can be left open, the door of compassion. And I love this poem for so many reasons, but this echoing of I am still arriving. Every second I'm still arriving, and I'm arriving to these different parts of myself, the mayfly, the frog, the bird, the pirate, right? That these parts of us, whether that we look externally, yes, those are players externally, but we also can look in the shadowy parts, the parts that we don't like of ourselves, the parts that we want to disown, that we don't want to look at, that we don't want to be close to, that we exile. And in this invitation of even in this moment, I am still arriving. I'm arriving in this body sufficiently standing on a foundation of truth such that I can open these doors of my heart to welcome in the parts that I might have exhaled, the parts that I might not really like, the parts that I don't want to acknowledge that are true, the parts that I'm too scared to see. Right. And then this, I always think about this poem in terms of the teachings of equanimity. Like, yes, this is true. All of these different parts are out in the world. All these different parts are also within ourselves. And can we understand, oh, the part not yet capable of loving, parts of ourselves that might be too shut down. We're not quite there yet to be able to fold that in. Okay, that's where we are. But the honesty and understanding of that we can be fragmented and we can work towards incorporating those parts off in time. with a sense of gentleness and understanding to be able to incorporate all parts such that we can be close, close to ourselves, close to, again, our own Buddha nature, our sense of being able to move in the world in the way that we want to, the how of how we move along this path. Another poem with David Wyatt, start close in. Start close in. Don't take the second step or the third. Start with the first thing close in, the step you don't want to take. Start with the ground you know, the pale ground beneath your feet, your own way to begin the conversation. Start with your own question. Give up on other people's questions. Don't let them smother something simple. To hear another's voice, follow your own voice. Wait until that voice becomes an intimate private ear that can really listen to another. Start right now. Take a small step you can call your own. Don't follow someone else's. Don't follow someone else's heroics. Be humble and focused. Start close in. Don't mistake the other for your own. Start close in. Don't take the second step or the third. Start with the first thing, close in, the step you don't want to take. I'm going to invite you to close your eyes. And just take a minute to, so there's a lot of words, so kind of let that filter in to check in how you are, where you are, connecting back in with the body. And to consider this notion of starting close in, to take that first step, not the second, not the third, but the first step in. To consider how this lands, what this means for you. It might mean different things for each one of us. But starting close in he writes that an invitation into the center of our own body, into the center of our own experience, into the center of what is really true for us. What we know to be true. Again, that notion of what really matters to us. Our own qualities of the heart. A sense of when we are clear. The mind is clear, the heart is open. There's a easy, steady congruence standing upon the ground of our own truth. To take for a moment, how does this feel? Whether it's a familiar and known place, or whether we'd imagine it. How would it be to stand close in to the very center of our being, of that which is true, of that which is clear, freed from the hindrances, freed from greed, hatred, and delusion. When we stand in the center of ourselves, in those moments when the mind is steady and still and the heart is open, and to give yourself really a sense of dropping, well, what does that feel like? Again, it may be a familiar place, it may be imagined into, so we imagine into it, what would that feel like? A sense of congruency, a sense of truth. A sense of assuredness within ourselves that we are close in to that which is true. Of how we want to show up in the world for ourselves and for others. And to play with this invitation, what is that next step? Not the second, not the third, what's that next step? First step depends upon the last step depends upon the first. What is this next step that we take? When we give ourselves permission to relax back into our own Buddha nature, our own sense of, again, the steady, quiet mind, the open heart, relaxed belly. What is that next step we would take? Be it in relationship to our own lives, our own life, relationship to those around us, the relationship to the way in which we move, right? If we are always in this place of movement, always on a journey, can we give ourselves permission to stay close in so that on this journey we don't become separated or estranged or exiled from ourselves, but rather we allow the best of ourselves to accompany us as we move and interact with the humans around us, the natural world, the animal kingdom. Again, the sense of taking our place in the family of things from this grounded, congruent place of staying close in. So, thank you for your kind attention. I'm going to stop there.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.